start. Ninth lesson in this quarter. I tell you, the quarter is going by speedily. Just a few weeks from now, and it'll be a new quarter, and this lesson will be history. We're on lesson 9, which begins on page 33 in your book. If you don't have a lesson, I can't recall right off if the ones on the back are lesson 8 or 9, but you can grab one of those. It might be maybe looking at lesson 8 if you do, but we're on lesson 9. If you don't have the material, get with me after class and we'll get you a copy of it so you can study it. We've talked about several things from the book of John. There's a lot of things that each account of the gospel covers. But then there are some things that are peculiar to certain accounts of the gospel. In other words, there may be things that you find in Matthew, Mark, and John that you don't find in Luke. Or Luke may record something that you don't find in the rest of the accounts of the gospel. But this quarter has been focusing on evidences of belief from the book of John. That doesn't mean that we've not looked at texts elsewhere in the Bible. But primarily our focus has been within the book of John, what evidences are there that shows beyond a shadow of a doubt that Jesus is who he said that he was. I ask you every week, what is the theme for the book of John, and where is that statement found at? If you were going to look at a purpose statement for the book of John, where would it be?
John 20, 30, 31.
Good deal. And so I hope that each and every one of you has underscored that in your Bible, made a mental note of it, and that you think about that when you study the book of John. So in the lesson today, in three that are following, we're going to focus on the death of Jesus, his burial, his resurrection, and his appearances. If you were to sum up the gospel, those would be the areas that it would include. When you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 15, Paul makes that statement when he talks about the fact that they were saved by the gospel. And he says how that Jesus died according to the Scriptures, was buried according to the Scriptures, that he was raised according to the Scriptures, and that he was seen. And so that's what we're going to look at today in three lessons, Lord willing, following. And there's a lot of other things, as I've told you on every lesson. These are not exhaustive lessons, but hopefully they will promote your own study, and you can take these things and study them at home. When man sinned against God, spiritual and physical death came upon the scene. That's Genesis chapter 2, verse 17, and Genesis chapter 3, make that correction, Genesis chapter 3, verse 19, and Romans chapter 5, verse 12. God had told them, do not partake of this tree, the fruit of this tree. In the day that ye thereof, thou shalt surely what?
Die.
In the Bible, death is spoken of in two ways at least. What are they? Spiritual and physical, in every sense of the word. When the Bible talks about death, it's always talking about a what?
Separation.
A separation. Whether it's talking about spiritual death in the sense that we are separated from God as a result of our sin, or the spirit separates from the body, that's what death is. Today you hear people saying so-and-so died two or three times and they brought him back. Man doesn't have that ability to cause the spirit to go back in man. God placed it there, and where it separates. And so think about that when you think about death. Since that time, man, both men and women, have experienced death as it is appointed unto all, Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27. One day you are going to die, and one day I'm going to die. And that's the reality. And we need to make all the preparation that we can with the best of our ability to do the things that God would have us to do. But what's significant about the death of Jesus, and even more to the point of our study, how is his death an evidence that he was the Son of God? The Bible has a lot to say about his death, not only his death, but his burial, his resurrection, his appearances. And so we're going to look at the death. I want us to look at some events leading to Jesus' death. There's a lot of events that the Bible talks about prior to his crucifixion. Some of them not mentioned in the book of John. I don't know if you have a book. Some of them are called Harmony of the Gospels. Some of them are called the Four. I think J.W. McGarvey wrote one called the Fourfold Gospel. What it does, it just makes a nice comparison of the Gospels. Some of them will put all that together in a chronological order. Those are still available, and they're not expensive, so you might want to look at getting one of those. For a more complete record of events prior to his crucifixion of Jesus, you want to consider what Matthew records about it, what Mark does, what Luke does, and what John does. For example, Jesus' prayer for the apostles and all disciples is unique to John's record. In John 17, someone says, where is the Lord's Prayer? Where's that found at? John 17, not the Sermon on the Mount, but John 17. The whole chapter was a prayer that the Lord offered. Well, all four gospel accounts tell of Peter severing the ear of the high priest's servant. I've got those references. Only Luke's account tells of Jesus healing him. I think the fact of his name is peculiar to one of the gospel accounts. Luke 22, 63 through 65 is the sole record of Jesus being beaten by the guards. Caiaphas condemning Jesus is recorded in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, but it's not mentioned in the book of John. The remorse of Judas is recorded in Matthew 27, the first 10 verses, but it's not recorded in Matthew or Mark, Luke, or John's record. And the list can just go on and on when you think about the comparisons. So we'll say, what's the point about that? The point is you need to look at Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John and compare those and put those together. Remember when we had at least one sermon on the trials of Jesus? Not all of the details about his trial or his trials before his crucifixion are found in just one book of the Bible. And that can be a lengthy study when you try to put all those together and put them in a chronological order the best that you can. And so you need to compare those and look at the events that took place prior to his crucifixion. I want us to think about some prophecies regarding the events prior to Jesus' death. I tell you, as we've stated before, that the fulfillment of prophecies is a strong evidence in who Jesus was, who he is today. There's no way that one individual could fulfill to a T every single prophecy in the Old Testament. I don't know how many there are. Some have estimated that there's above 300. I don't know. Never counted them. But you think about this, one man fulfilled every single prophecy that was stated in the Old Testament. And there's a lot that the Old Testament prophets stated concerning the events prior to his death. Notice some of these. It was prophesied that he would be accused of false witnesses. And I gave you the references. We don't have time to look all those up. It was prophesied that he would be struck on the head. Now think about it. It's one thing to say something and speak in general terms. I mean, the person's name, I fail to recall who he is, Nostradamus, spoke in general terms a lot of times. This is going to come to pass. Then something happens. He had it figured out centuries ago. It's one thing to say something in general terms, and by chance somebody just actually hit the nail on the head with that. But when you look at the prophecies of Jesus, some of them are general. But the vast majority of them are specific prophecies. Think about some of these. Well, it's general that he was going to be accused of false witnesses. We have that today. People are accused falsely. That's general. Beaten and spat upon. Betrayed by friends. Despised and rejected. Be oppressed and afflicted, yet not open his mouth. Be sold for 30 pieces of silver. That's pretty specific. Be mistreated. To bear our grief and our sorrow. Be smitten and the sheep would scatter. Some of those are very specific prophecies. And we just touched the hem of the garment when you look at the ones that have to do with the events prior to his death, prior to his crucifixion. Well, I'll talk about all the ones in his crucifixion, which we'll get to, all the ones relative to his burial, all of the ones relative to his resurrection, and so forth and so on. So I hope that you can appreciate what the scriptures say about that. Think of the enormity of all of the prophecies that were fulfilled by one man, Jesus of Nazareth. Again, these things are written that we might believe. And not only believe, that we might believe that he is the Son of God, and believe that we might have life through his name. That harmonizes really well with what the scriptures state in Acts chapter 4 and then verse 12. Any thoughts about that? Folks, there's a lot you could add to that on the list, but these are just set forth for some things for you to consider as we think about the death of Jesus as an evidence of his belief. Remember when we did the lesson on the fulfillment of prophecies and we talked about how large the state of Texas was and so forth? If you marked one of those silver dollars and you filled up Texas 2 feet deep with silver dollars and blindfolded a man, told him he had one chance to go anywhere in the state that he could and reached down and picked one up, what's the chances he picked the one up that you marked? I don't know if that even comes close to the astronomical number that it would take for one person to fulfill all of those from his birth through his ascension to heaven, and even what took place after his ascension to heaven. The death of Jesus. Someone has once said that the Romans did not invent execution by the cross, but they did perfect execution by the cross. A lot of different ways in which individuals were crucified. A lot of different ways in which ultimately their life was taken, even though they hung on the cross. Some of them were, the death came speedily as they were pierced or the legs were broken or whatever the case may have been. Someone said that according to history, Peter requested to be hung upside down because he didn't feel that he was worthy to die in the same manner as the Lord did. I don't know that. But the Romans didn't invent, evidently, execution by the cross. But they had built upon that system of execution. I know that it's a horrendous way to die. And I put in your appendix, by the way, the statement from a medical doctor's perspective on crucified, being crucified and crucifixion. You can read that. It's a way in which we would not want to die. A lot of shame that was associated with dying on the cross. What are some of those ways that would be shameful for a person to be crucified? Why would that bring shame upon an individual? Embarrassment, shame. He was numbered with the transgressors. Crucified outside the city walls, outside the wall. Mocked. Spit on. The fact that his garments were torn from him. They mocked him as they put on attire that would be associated with royalty or a king. Mocked him and then put on his own attire. I don't know how little clothing he had when he was on the cross. I don't know that. But you can see the shame as you would be stripped, beaten, scourged, the flesh ripped from you, hung on a cross, and eventually died. And folks, the thing about it, which is a lesson in another direction, but he did every bit of that willingly so that you, me, and everyone else can go to heaven. He made it possible. It is beyond me, even though we have all been in this position, that we would look at our position and say, in light of what the Lord has done for me and for others, for mankind, I am not going to obey him. Led, as Isaiah 53 would say, he was led as a sheep, dumb, to the slaughter, didn't open his mouth. And a lot of other things that the scriptures say about that. The crucifixion of Jesus is recorded in Matthew chapter 27, Mark 15, Luke 23, and John 19. And again, I would recommend you to go back and to read each one of those examples, each one of those records of his crucifixion. John's account of the crucifixion speaks about the following. That doesn't mean that these are peculiar to John's record. But we're talking about evidences within the book of John. And here's what John records relative to the crucifixion. I gave you the references. Again, these are found in the 19th chapter of the book of John. The scourging of Jesus. Sometimes we may have the idea that someone was just simply whipped. You know, maybe you've seen videos of individuals who were caned. Or maybe think about a whip, someone, whatever, might see it on a movie or something like that. I don't know what this device looked like that Jesus was scourged with. I don't know that. But I know from reading that a lot of records would say that a lot of times there was fragments of bone, fragments of metal, and even fragments of glass that were attached to those ropes, if you will, those strips that would come out of that handle. And so as an individual was whipped with those, it would grab hold and rip the flesh. In spite of our very best efforts to imagine what he went through, there's no doubt in my mind that it is pale in comparison to what he actually went through. We think about the movie The Passion of the Christ. Or we might think of that movie. It portrays this individual who is portraying Jesus and what he went through. That probably pales in comparison to what he went through. And again, he did that for you and he did it for me. In just a little while, we are going to remember the Lord's death. As we do each and every Sunday, as the New Testament Christians have done since the establishment of the Lord's church. And we'll continue to do until the Lord returns. Pilate sought to release Jesus. He questions Jesus. Jesus delivered over by Pilate to be crucified, and I couldn't imagine him being in Pilate's shoes. After talking to Jesus, and Jesus basically not responded very little, and then Pilate would tell the Jews, what evil has he done? I've examined him. He's done nothing worthy of death. Why crucify him? But he came to the demands of the people. Soldiers cast lots for Jesus' garments. Jesus commits the care of his mother to the disciple whom he loved. Jesus thirsts and is given vinegar. Remember those seven I am statements that Jesus made, or the I statements, the statements from the cross you could even look at, I thirst. Jesus dies. Some of the records, as you look back in your appendix and you read about what it could have been like to have went through crucifixion, some of the records just simply record that horrendous death by saying they crucified him. Not much detail. They crucified him. Jesus' side pierced, and there came forth blood and water. His body removed from the cross and prepared for burial. Then the burial of Jesus. Listen, what an awful death to die, and to do so undeserving of it, but yet for the benefit of others. Let me ask you a question. How many of us this morning has made sacrifices on behalf of others? Every hand could go up with that. And if you did that, every one of you made sacrifices on behalf of others, whether it's your spouse, your family, whatever the case may be. doesn't even compare to the sacrifice that Jesus made. And here's the thing. And to know about it beforehand. To know it. When he began in Matthew chapter 16 to try to prepare the minds of the disciples, even though they didn't fully understand it, that we are going to Jerusalem and the Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of sinners. They are going to scourge him. They are going to crucify him, but he's going to rise from the dead the third day. Could you imagine that? Remember when Paul was on his way to Rome? Or another event where they lied in wait for him and he said, "Listen, I'm ready to die on behalf of the Lord." How many of us today would be busy about doing the Lord's work if we knew that there was even the potential or the possibility that we would stare death in the face? Would we? I think we give up too easy sometimes. But think about what the Lord did. And prophecies regarding the death of Jesus. Perhaps there are many more prophecies, probably without doubt, in the Scriptures that could be put here. The prophecies given are so that we might ever be impressed with the fact that Jesus fulfilled these prophecies, which, like other prophecies, were given centuries prior to his death. Some of these Bible writers didn't even know one another. Some of them may be contemporaries of one another, but maybe didn't meet one another. I don't know. But yet they penned these things centuries, hundreds of years before their fulfillment. Consider the 20 following prophecies and their fulfillment. The Passover sacrifice with no broken bones. I'll give you the references on here. Hung upon a tree. Remember again about the specificity of a lot of the prophecies from the Old Testament. Hung upon a tree as a curse. Jesus would be thirsty. His hands and his feet would be pierced. That reference, Matthew 27:35, should be dropped down to number 5, the next one, which is soldiers would cast lots for his garments. Given gall and vinegar to drink. Commit his spirit into the hands of God. Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. How could they be the same? I'm dealing with those questions that someone mailed to us, 43 questions on propagating the oneness of the Father, Son, the Holy Spirit from the standpoint of they are the same person. Here's a passage that you could use in knocking the props out from under that air. Numbered with transgressors, Passover male and no blemish slain and blood applied as protection from judgment. Let me ask you a question. How was Jesus a fulfillment of that? As our, the Hebrew writers say that he is our Passover. How is he our Passover? How did he fit the bill? Without guile, without sin. Hebrews chapter 4 talks about we serve a high priest. He says, "For we serve a high priest which has been tempted like as we are, yet without sin." The Hebrew writer would pen. Numbered with the transgressors, we have already looked at. Lifted up as Moses lifted up the serpent. Feel forsaken by God, mocked and insulted. Friends stand afar off. Reproach of others fell on him. A son who is given, wounded for our transgressions, not for his own, but for mine and for yours. Led as a lamb to the slaughter. Isaiah 53, remember that's what the eunuch was reading in his chariot as he was returning back from worshiping in Jerusalem. Sinless and without guile. Make intercession for a transgressor. They would look on him whom they pierced. Jesus fulfilled not one, but all 20 of these prophecies and all the others regarding him, as we've already stated. Perfectly fulfilled these. Not well, maybe he could. Now listen, how many times after, and really when you think about the theme of the book, it is salvation in the one to come. That's what the Old Testament is pointing toward. And after his crucifixion, it is salvation in what? The one who came. It pointed forward, then it points back to the cross. Think about how many times as the apostles and others went forward to proclaim the gospel of Christ that they made their appeal to the Old Testament scriptures. We've had classes on that led by some of the other men. Made their appeal back to the Old Testament scriptures, the scriptures that the Jews had that they were familiar with. The scriptures that the Lord would say, I believe in John chapter 6, search the scriptures, for in them you think you have eternal life, and they are they which testify of me. Read, pay attention to what you've been reading. By the way, that's a good lesson for us today. You read a Bible reading plan, that's fantastic. Keep up the good work. But pay attention to what you're reading. Go ahead, Scott.
Not only look, miracles were for a certain purpose. People may believe. But when you look at prophecies, you have a time period, during the patriarchal age as well as during the Mosaic age or years. These prophecies had a time when they will come into effect. And that was done through God's providence. Paul speaks in Galatians when the time was fulfilled. And that'd be a time when Elizabeth was going to be born. It just something didn't, well, here's a haphazard thing. Events had to take place at the time that Rome was in power. A certain king was on the throne. Certain, as you talk about, crucifix was at that time, may not be in the past time. But, yeah, I don't know, it began to fathom. Think of prophecies that what all had to take place throughout history that God through his providence brought to effect. So the time was there that God, the time come, that God orchestrated all that through. To me, that's what is really amazing of the events that had to take place at the right time that God before the world knew was going to take place.
Excellent point. And you know, I don't know if we ever stop to think about it from that perspective, that's a good point.
Zechariah had to be a priest at that point. And you just look at all of it. Joseph will be espoused to Mary. That took time through history that God knew that he orchestrated that was going to happen, that he would be born of a virgin. And so you had all that. And just, like I say, it's probably not found.
Yeah, you're right. And again, it impresses us with the dependability, the reliability of the Bible. When you look at all those, very good point. The death of Jesus as an evidence of belief. We have 5 minutes. But here's where the rubber meets the road. When we think about what does any of this have to do with the fact that he claimed to be the Son of God, it has everything to do with it. If you cannot believe this is seed, if you cannot believe the prophet, then his message is false and Jesus is left being a liar and a fraud. And how do you distinguish between what was the test between a true prophet and his message and a false one? Well, there it came about. Now, Mark made a good, he may want to share that with the class. Now, made a good point about, or might have been one of the other ones. A mark on the spot. But just made a point, I think it was last week or maybe the week before, concerning that point. Matthew 27, notice the following. Matthew 27:54, now when the centurion and they that were with him watching Jesus saw the earthquake and those things that were done, they feared greatly, saying, what did they say? What did he say? Truly, this is the Son. Or was the Son of God. Folks, we looked at so far in the book of John about how miracles were an evidence that Jesus is who he said he was. And it confirmed what he said when they saw the things they did, they believed on. Words was an evidence of belief. Remember the lady at the well, they kind of didn't believe her at first. And then they heard Jesus themselves and said, now we believe not because of the first thing, but because we've heard you with our own ears. Prophecies. And not only that, but what he was beholding, when he saw what was going on, he said, truly this was the Son of God. Think of the evidence in that. And here's some other passages you can look at as you think about his death. Hebrews 13:12, wherefore Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered without the gate. Acts 9:20, and straightway he preached Christ in the synagogues that he is the Son of God. Acts 17:3, open and alleging that Christ must needs have suffered and risen again the third from the dead, and that this Jesus, whom I preach unto you, is Christ. There was other people, by the way, named Jesus, as we've talked about in previous lessons. But there was something special about this man. This Jesus is the Christ. Open the legend from the scriptures. This is our evidence of that. Go ahead.
What you alluded to a while ago was our discussion that we had upstairs with, you know, these great acts and miracles. You know, there was illusionists that are recorded for us that seem to mimic or copy some of the things that were done to Christ and Moses when he turned the water to blood. You know, Pharaoh had his own magicians that could make water red, but by no means did they have the power or the ability to shut a nation down and take over one of the mightiest rivers in the world. Big difference.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Good point. The death of Jesus is simply one evidence in the belief that Jesus is the Son of God, but yet this evidence is so powerful that any honest person, and I'd underscore any honest person, seeking to learn the truth can see its point into Jesus as the Son of God. Got a couple minutes. Let's go through these questions on page 42 of your booklet. Are all the events leading to and including the death of Jesus recorded in all the accounts of the gospel? Again, we need to consider what all four accounts say. List some events that can be found in particular gospel accounts that are not included in others. His prayer? Good job. Any others?
Healing of the soldier's ear.
Healing of the soldier's ear? And being beaten? The name of the servant, the remorse of Judas, and the list just goes on and on with some of those. It make you a good comparison of the accounts. List five prophecies concerning the events prior to Jesus.
Struck on the head.
Pierced. Well,
Bernie.
False witnesses. 30 pieces of silver. Someone else up here. Despised and rejected. And again, on and on. How many of those were fulfilled? All of them. Did anyone get something other than all of them or all? Anybody put part or a few? Good for you. Give five prophecies concerning the death of Jesus. No broke bones, Passover, sacrifice, numbered with the transgressors. What? Some others.
Soldiers guess a lot of stories.
Good.
Jesus would be thirsty.
Thirsty? How many of them were fulfilled? Oh. Very quickly, how is the death of Jesus an evidence that he was a Son of God? Be a little more lengthy answer to that if you look at lesson 10 next week, Lord willing, on page 43 of your booklet will be on the burial of Jesus. I appreciate your good attention.